Hey guys.
How's it going? Welcome to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Just like before and just like in the future. Right here from noon to 2 Eastern Time on the Liberty Radio Network. That's libertyradionetwork.com. And you can find all my archives at scotthorton.org. Oh, did I say? It's libertarian foreign policy, mostly. And I got about 3,800-something interviews going back to 2003 there at scotthorton.org. That's my website. And whole show archives, too, if you like the whole show. And, yeah, you can sign up for the podcast feed and all that stuff. You got to do that, maybe. And the chat room. Hey, chat room guys, how's things? I got some chat room guys there today. Join up the chat room with the guys, hang out during the show. Boy, that reminds me, the whole chat room subject there reminds me, tomorrow on liberty.me, Jeff Tucker and I will be hosting Eye on the Empire, which we named after Alan Bach's old column for antiwar.com. The great Alan Bach. Eye on the Empire, that's our show. We're on episode 5 or 6 or something like that now. And we'll be talking about NSA spying, and I think maybe we'll talk about some Israel-Palestine and some other things. So that should be fun. Jeff Tucker, the great Jeff Tucker from liberty.me, which sponsors this show, by the way, which you should sign up for, according to my opinion anyway. And that'll be 9 Eastern tomorrow night, 8 o'clock Texas time, tomorrow Tuesday night at liberty.me. All right, so there's that. And then what other things should I tell you? No guests today on the show, unless I hear back from any of the 7 people. Okay, that was a lie. It's probably more like 4 or 5 people. I invited more people than I got room for, but I got a don't think so, but maybe. Back so far. God dang it. But that's all right, because I can cover the news my dang self. You want to watch? I'll make a bet with you. We've got plenty of news. Plenty. More than enough, even. Bad news to talk about, I think. But before the bad news, I got some good news for you, too. I hope there's no CNN tabs open with their damn autoplay. Let's see. Okay, good. It's safe to play this audio. Check it out. Oh, let me turn that down just a little. Yeah, check it out. Y'all want to win a free vacation to the jungles of Costa Rica this summer and help support the Scott Horton Show? You can. Joshua Hughes, peace activist and permaculturalist, runs Verde Energia Pacifica, an intentional community in the mountains of Llanos de Periscal, Costa Rica, and he's offered to raffle off a week's stay to listeners of this show. Airfare is on you, but transportation to and from the airport, as well as a 7-day stay for you and a guest in your own private house with 3 meals a day, is covered. You can learn and practice some skills, or just go for a swim in their river, pool, or waterfall, walk jungle trails, enjoy the views, do yoga or dance in the studio, make art, play music, check out a local soccer game, or simply relax in a hammock by the river and read. Raffle tickets are just $50. Stop by scotthorton.org/raffle for details. And anyone who enters will get half off on any future stay down there. scotthorton.org/raffle. That's pretty cool, right? So yeah, Joshua Hughes, who I interviewed on this show about some peace Nikki type things in the last, I don't know, few months anyway. He owns this thing down there. It's a permaculture farm, and people pay money and they go and they stay there. Or it's not a farm. I don't know exactly what it's called. Anyway, but it's like half a resort and half a thing where you go to work and learn stuff. But you win this raffle, you don't got to work. It's just a vacation. You get your own private house for 7 days, 3 meals in the jungle by the river down in Costa Rica. Like I say, airfare's on you, but otherwise they'll get you from the airport and bring you there and you stay for a week. And of course you and a guest as well. And that sounds like a pretty good deal and help support the show too, right? Just go to scotthorton.org/raffle and, the raffle tickets are $50. Let's see if we can raise a little bit of money for this show. And, Also, like he said there, that was me. Like I said there on that spot, anyone who joins the raffle, your name will go on the list. You'll get half off if you want to, go down there and participate or just take a vacation or whatever it is, whatever level you participate down there. You'll have a 50% discount from here on out just for entering and helping the support. So, yeah, it's $50 for a raffle ticket because it's a fundraiser for the show. But also, I think that's a decent price to pay, don't you think, for a good chance. Probably a pretty good chance. I don't know what the odds will be. I'll let you know when the orders start coming in. But, hey, I think you'll have a pretty good chance of winning. So, seems like a fair price, right? Costa Rica, jungles, rivers, fun, waterfalls, and swimming, and basket weaving. Cool stuff. And then if you go to scotthorton.org/raffle, then what'll happen is, oops, I need to hit publish on that. You can find a link to what I'm talking about, too. So here, I'm sorry. Let me spell it right for you. I always spell it wrong, don't I? I always do spell it wrong. So yeah, man, I never did anything like this before, and I guess I'm just really lucky that I have this great listener to the show who had this great idea to do it. I'd have never come up with this in a million years, right? Raffle off or something. Verd Energia Pacifica. Verd Energia, V-E-R-D, Energia.org is the URL, but just go to scotthorton.org/raffle for all the details and follow the link from there, and you can learn about all what they do there. Pretty good deal. I'm optimistic, hoping to raise a little bit of money for the show. And I guess I'll be jealous of whoever actually wins this thing. I don't get to go on vacation. I only work. But anyway, doesn't that sound cool, chat room guys? What do you think? Sound like a good idea? All right. I think so, too. And then I want to say another thing, which is I met a guy, met a couple people, fans of the show. And just like I was kind of going on and on about last week about Tamara's tweet, they were explaining where it was they came from and how it was that they ended up being individualist, libertarian, anarcho-capitalist types like myself. And hey, part of it was because of me. Ain't that nice? But also the other part of it was, hey, because they're people, man, and they're at least somewhat open to new ideas, and so they had to cast out all the old crap they believed when the new stuff they decided they liked better left no room for it anymore. Happens all the time. And it's funny because I guess, I don't know, I don't really change that much. I've been a libertarian pretty much since I was a young teenager. I just get better and better, but not really different. I don't know. So it's not my experience as much. But that was the thing that got me tripping about Tamara's tweet, where she said, hey, tell me about your political philosophical journey to wherever you are now, you know? And everybody was saying this arrow, that era, you know, all the way through how they got to where they're at. People jumping all over the place. People believing all kinds of different things. People being all different kind of stages of religious or not, or left or right, conservative on these or those issues, or liberal on these or those ones, or God knows what. Some have even been libertarian anarchists and then become more statist again. That's cool. But that means, the point is, I should be nicer and more open to the idea that there are more different kinds of people listening than I usually consider. Then maybe you could be an individualist anarchist, too. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours, max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. Now, Kalief Browder. You know this story? He's the young black kid. He was 16 years old, I believe from Brooklyn, New York. The cops roll up, had a guy in the car with him, said, yeah, that's the guy. He robbed me of my backpack and all the stuff in it. Well, so the cops grabbed him, searched him. He didn't have any of the stuff that he supposedly had stolen. The guy changed his story, said, oh, well, he tried to rob me. Okay. Oh, no, he robbed me a couple of weeks ago. Not this time, but the time before that. He was the one from that one, huh? Well, whatever, good enough for government work. So the cops arrest this 16-year-old kid. They have no evidence whatsoever except the changing word of some schmuck. No other corroborating evidence whatsoever. They take him to Rikers Island. He can't afford the $10,000 bail. And so he sits in there for 3 years awaiting a trial that never comes. 3 years. He has no public defender, only some guy from legal aid who I guess forgot about him. 3 years he's in an adult jail at Rikers Island. 16 when he gets there. Never been in trouble before in his entire life. Nothing criminal about the guy. No reason to believe. No indication whatsoever, as Mohammed El-Baradei might say, that he stole this guy's backpack or did anything to anybody at all. He does 3 years in Rikers Island, two of them in solitary confinement. He's repeatedly beaten, and the New Yorker magazine got video of it, of him being brutally beaten by a bunch of people at once. The first part is the cops beating the crap out of him for no reason, and then the second part is the cops completely failing to protect him from a gigantic gang of guys, who one of them spits on him, and so he punches the guy who spit on him, and then blam, it's 20 to 1. Well, more like 10 to 1 or something. And the two cops completely fail to protect him in this video. You can find all the links for this on my Twitter feed if you want to look. Twitter.com/ScottHortonShow. It's all retweeted for you there. Sean King had tweeted out that video earlier today. And then, get this, man. So there's an interview of him by the Huffington Post. They interviewed him when he finally got out. They said to him, we'll let you out with time served if you plead guilty. They were threatening him with 15 years in the pen, right? Rikers Island, that's just jail. They were threatening him with 15 years in the pen if he went to trial. They said, just plead guilty and we'll give you time served and let you go. And after 3 years, two of them in solitary confinement, which is torture. It is torture. He says, no, I'm not pleading guilty to something that I did not do. So I guess I'm just going to have to fight it out and see what happens. Man, that's brave. That is seriously, that is a tough kid. Can you believe that? They'd have let him go. And then not long after that, I guess somebody finally showed the damned case to the assistant district attorney who said, I can't prosecute this. Let him go. And they dropped the charges. So he was finally set free after 3 years of really prison without trial. And then over the weekend, he finally hanged himself to death with the power cord for the window unit air conditioner. Pulled the air conditioner unit out of the window, wrapped the cord around his neck, and jumped out. His mom found him. And that's after, you know, rap stars and for some reason Rosie O'Donnell and I forget it, Jay-Z or Puff Daddy or one of those guys became his friend, tried to, paid for him to go to college, paid for him to see psychiatrists. Not enough. And so the thing is about it, guys, is that you just get over the mythology. I mean, I know we all watch a lot of TV, dude. I mean, I hate TV, and I still watch the hell out of it. But, man, that isn't real. Now, I read, I don't know how to say his name, Coates, at The Atlantic today, where he said, these are our servants. And I thought, man, come on, stop saying that. They are not. I mean, at least give it some ironic quotes. But you're just going to take it at face value that the government are your servants? How much evidence to the contrary do you need? When did they ever do anything for you? The state is your enemy. And I understand for black people in America, it's a little bit more conflicted of a thing. Because even though it was state-mandated racism that they eventually overcame, it was the national government twice that came and struck down slavery and then struck down, official white supremacy, Jim Crow white supremacy in the South. So they're a little bit conflicted there about public and private power and local versus national power. And I can understand why for historical reasons. But man, to say that the judges and the prosecutors and the wardens of New York State and New York City are the servants of the people of New York, I don't think that that's true. Because look at this dead kid. Were they his servants? Did they serve him? In the Huffington Post interview, he talks at length about how they would starve him. And they'd barely give you anything in solitary. He said that's part of the punishment. Even if you get your 3 trays a day, it's barely anything. And at one point, they withheld 4 meals in a row. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, and breakfast again. Until finally he was able to get a captain to pay attention to him and hear him out. And get him, a bologna sandwich. And, the thing is about it, too, that this is all a great argument against the empire, isn't it? Isn't the whole premise of the Bush administration and Obama administration's response to the terror war that our society is so damned good that we're going to go remake your society so that it's good enough that it won't cause terrorism anymore? As it wasn't the evil, the brutal torture and murder and dictatorship of American society that turned them against us in the first place. What? The last decade of the 20th century existed? No, but I rather pretend it didn't. They all cry. But wasn't that the whole premise of, yeah, we're going on a crusade. We're going to clear, hold, and build. These are all direct quotes now. We are going to clear, hold, and build. We are going to give you a government in a box. We are going to change your entire society. That's what John Nagel said, who's now the Deputy Secretary of Defense for Policy. In Doug Feith's seat, right? Chat room guys, help me, man. I might have missed the... I think that's the job he just got, Nagel. We're going to change your entire society, they said. Because we got our act together so good over here. But then you look at the story of Kalief Browder, and as he put it in the Huffington Post interview, this happens every day to people. Every day in America. You're not so good. In fact, you're probably about second or third to last place when it really comes to justice. All slogans notwithstanding. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still. If you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the thing here. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. One more piece of police state news. The grand jury has indicted the cop that murdered Walter Scott. Indicted him on a charge of murder. Can you believe that? It makes me wonder whether they overcharged him just so they could let him get away with it. Maybe not, though. I guess not. Boy, that DA's got the fight of her life going down right now. I'll tell you what. See what happens, but... And that's the one where... Oh, come on, man. The last shot. It's boom, boom, boom. I think maybe it's five total. Boom, 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 boom. And then the cop is frustrated. You can tell. He's like, oh, man, I keep missing. So he takes a second, lines up his shot better, and then blam, he gets him through the heart. And then, all right, finally. Jeez, I was feeling, a little behind. Subpar for the course, man. My first four shots only went through his back, but not through his heart. Let me hang on a second now. Let me line this up. Oh, there he goes. That's police work right there for you. Anyway. So I guess that's one good thing. I guess we'll see what happens with that, though. You know what? I want to talk a little bit more real quick before I switch to bombing Iran. A little bit more about what I was trying to say there about the how people change, and it seems strange to me that they do, but I guess they do sometimes. Did you guys see the clip of the guy confront Tom Cotton? Now, Tom Cotton, he is, as the guy who confronts him says, among the biggest war hawks in Washington, D.C. The guy says, you know, you, Lindsey Graham, basically the same thing, right? And he nods his head and acknowledges that that's basically right. But, you know, he's a combat veteran. He was a captain in the army in Iraq and Afghanistan. So he has that thing where he gets to say, hey, I was over there and you weren't and blah, blah, blah. And nobody can question him and this and that, right? But this guy says, one of my sons is dead in this war. And my other two are over there, which somebody ought to ask him. How come he keeps sending his son off to be mercenaries for the greatest purveyor of violence and corruption on the face of the planet Earth. But anyway, so he says, in essence, I'm a gold star dad. And my question is, when do I get my other sons back? Or do I get them back? Come on with it. So now, Tom Cotton has to say, oh, well, geez, we got enemies and we got to fight them and blah, 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 you know, boilerplate. But he can't disrespect the guy. He can't fight back because he's a gold star dad. But so then this goes back to my original argument about people changing. It's all about social psychology. It's never about the facts. It's always just about, I don't know, what seems right, you know? You have somebody who's a hardcore neocon warmonger, and then their uncle says to him, oh, come on, that's all a bunch of crap. And they go, huh? Oh, I mean, yeah, of course, you'd have to be a fool to buy into that. Right? All of a sudden, all that horrible stuff they said to everybody who knew better goes down the drain just because of the social psychology of the situation, you know? And so that was the deal with Tom Cotton. It doesn't matter whether Tom Cotton is right about anything or not. All that matters is he's a combat veteran, and presumably you're not. And so that means, you know, Bill Kristol can hide behind him. Anybody else can hide behind him. Bill Kristol's his daddy. And he has this social, psychological, you know, boo-hoo thing about the veteran's feelings and whatever, whatever. Only a gold star dad can say that, which is crazy, right? That's like saying only Jewish people can criticize Israel. Really? Well, I don't know. How Jewish you got to be to criticize Israel, you know? Shouldn't have to be part of this or that group to stick up for this or that argument. The truth is the truth. You know, what if someone was 15 years old and they got into a fight with Tom Cotton? They hadn't even, they're not even qualified. Now, they could go fight for America as a child soldier in South Sudan, but they can't join the U.S. Army until, you know, they can sign up when they're 17, right? So, do they not have an argument? They don't have, they shouldn't be listened to or taken seriously? Or say somebody who's fighting age, but they just got really bad eyesight. You know, I'm really nearsighted, Tom Cotton, and so I spent all my time reading, and it seems to me like the whole time you were fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan, you were actually serving as the tiny little pathetic sock puppet of the Ayatollah Khamenei, supreme leader of Iran, dispatching his enemies for him. And now you want to cry about it? You want to fight for him still in Iraq, but you want to fight against him in Syria? Why? What has led you to conclude that you should stop being the loyal servant of the Ayatollah Khamenei, Tom Cotton? What the hell? I got to be in the army to wonder about that? All I had to do was read for half an hour. Oh, look, it turns out here there used to be a war between Iraq and Iran. Yeah, America was on Iraq's side. Until 2003, when they took Iran's side. Obvious enough, you'd think. But yeah, no, the social psychology. I actually took that class in junior college because I was just trying to armor myself, you know? Like all the different ways that they manipulate you. All the different ways that people can be manipulated. And, boy, it'll kind of hurt your feelings if you are a humanist. You know, if you really like people, you'll be disappointed. You know, did I ever tell you this one where they did this study? Oh, and they did, it's not really science, but it's pseudo-social science, you know. And they did a thing where they'll show you political propaganda. Say the Democrats, the Republicans, or say even the environmentalists or the John Birchers or somebody like that, more toward the fringe. And then you get a group of people in the neighborhood together and you show them some political propaganda. Well, they'll be like two-thirds more likely to sign up for your mailing list and stay after and talk about how much they agreed and this and that and the other thing if you feed them peanuts. And then they're like three-quarters more likely if you feed them jelly beans, because, man, sugar beats salt. And that's how a bircher can make someone else a bircher. That's how an environmentalist can make someone else an environmentalist. Feed them candy while you tell them your shtick. And they will become a member of your group. Or tell somebody one thing, tell somebody something else with someone standing there, nodding their head, a stranger or someone they love, nodding their head, or standing there with their arms crossed, like, I've heard all this before and this is a bunch of nonsense, and then just judge and, you know, do the math. You do the same test over and over and over again, and you see just how powerful that is. Somebody standing there with their arms folded, and it'll even prevent them from ever taking the new idea on board. Just having someone standing there with their arms crossed. And then, of course, there's all the bad witness stuff, right? Where a white guy in blue jeans and a white shirt comes in and steals the professor's purse and runs out. And then all the testimony gets the color of the clothes wrong, the color of the skin wrong, the type of weapon wrong. You ask everybody in the auditorium what they saw, and they all saw something different, you know? It's amazing. People's brains and the way they work. And, you know, in fact, the one I remember the title for it was The Attitude Inoculation, where they give you a weak argument so that you defeat it with an argument. Oh, first they give you an argument. You go, yeah, okay, I guess that sounds right. And then they give you a weak argument against the one that you just took on, and you defeat it. And now you believe the thing that you just sort of kind of barely brought on board and just decided that you pretty much agree with a minute ago. Now you're committed because you just defeated a straw man argument against it. Attitude inoculation. That's how they go ahead and, you know, help indoctrinate you. And then I went home and I watched it happen on the nightly news that night. Here's an advocate of global warming. In his own words, yeah, global warming's great. We'll all go to the beach. Derp, derp, derp. And then, it was first as some scaremongering. And then that was the counterpoint with some derp. See, get it? I told the story wrong, but you get it.
Yeah, check it out. Y'all want to win a free vacation to the jungles of Costa Rica this summer and help support the Scott Horton Show? You can.
Joshua Hughes, peace activist and permaculturalist, runs Verde Energia Pacifica, an intentional community in the mountains of Llanos de Periscal, Costa Rica, and he's offered to raffle off a week's stay to listeners of this show. Airfare is on you, but transportation to and from the airport, as well as a 7-day stay for you and a guest in your own private house with 3 meals a day, is covered. You can learn and practice some skills, or just go for a swim in their river, pool, or waterfall, walk jungle trails, enjoy the views, do yoga or dance in the studio, make art, play music, check out a local soccer game, or simply relax in a hammock by the river and read. Raffle tickets are just $50. Stop by scotthorton.org/raffle for details. And anyone who enters will get half off on any future stay down there. scotthorton.org/raffle. Hey, all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, you guys, welcome back. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. So, Sina Tusi, I interviewed him one time. He's from RightWeb. And I'm going to see if I can get him on tomorrow to talk about the bomb Iran lobby gears up for 2016, which is mostly about Sheldon Adelson and the Israeli fifth column in the United States. And then, you know, I guess it didn't occur to me. I ought to interview this guy, too. Derek Davison. I forgot where this ran originally. Was this at Foreign Policy in Focus? No, Loeb blog. He wrote this thing for Jim Loeb's blog. Debunking Broad and Sanger and their hype in the New York Times. And basically, nah, I guess it's not really worth an interview. But the long and the short of it is that the Iranians are still enriching uranium. And Broad and Sanger, if you're not familiar, they're the devil, writing in the New York Times. Broad and Sanger, who for a decade or so referred unendingly in virtually every article to Iran's, quote, illicit nuclear weapons program. What? That never existed. That they were lying about in every single one of those articles. Somebody ought to put them on a little ice floe and kick them off out to sea, these two ridiculous idiots. And by the way, it's fun sometimes to watch what happens if William J. Broad writes an article about Iran with Mark Mazzetti because Sanger's out on vacation or something like that, and all of a sudden it has these words like alleged and maybe and the Israelis claim and, you know, the truth about what's not true written in it. So I guess the way I understand is William J. Broad is basically hardly even a human at all. He's basically just a co-author. His name is just there. He's the tag-along to David Sanger, who does all the lying. Because else, how do you explain that? Anyway, so they wrote this article. Oh, Iran's nuclear stockpile grows, complicating negotiations. No. And they even made that nitwit Marie Harf, the State Department spokeswoman, write about something. And she got a gigantic Twitter war with Sanger and thrashed him. What are you talking about, man? They're allowed to enrich. That's in the deal. And they're supposed to be down to this amount by the end of this month, not right now. The only question is whether it's all oxidized in time and we're all working on it and there is no trouble. So, that's it. Just hype. You see how, again, with the social psychology, well, gee whiz, Scott Horton, I don't know. I don't know anything about nuclear stuff. Sounds mathematical. Sounds complicated. If Sanger says there's a problem there, maybe there is. And I don't even know where to begin to figure it out myself. How many kilograms of what, according to which treaty now? And what statement of who at what time? That's Sheldon Richman's new article, how the state hides behind all the ceaseless complication of everything. They make everything so difficult for anyone to keep up with at all that they can just get away with lying. Well, of course, when you're dealing with nuclear issues, it's just like that anyway. But I guess the point is, I would just have you bear in mind that everything that you've ever heard that was scaremongering hype about Iran's nuclear program was not true. I mean, if I had to concede anything on that point, I would say, yes, the Israeli Mossad and their front, the Mujahideen e-cult, communist terrorist cult, and or their other front, David Albright from ISIS, who I think it's quite plausible, but not proven, that he's an Israeli agent. One or the other of those two, and they fight about who was first, outed the Iranians for beginning construction on the Natanz facility, which eventually became a centrifuge facility. But they were not in violation of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. They were not in violation of their safeguards agreement at the time that it was discovered. And so, aha, gotcha. You were digging a hole of a thing that admittedly one day became a thing and whatever. But the rules are you have to declare your new facility within 6 months from when you're going to actually begin to introduce nuclear material into the machines. And they weren't anywhere near 6 months. They were, in fact, years away. More than 2 years away. And so, yeah, they got caught on that one thing, but it wasn't a nuclear weapons program. And the rest is all just a bunch of debunked hype, mostly based on Israeli forgeries, the so-called alleged studies, or the possible military dimensions. It's all a bunch of bogus accusations. So just keep that in mind when you hear a bunch of scaremongering hype. Oh, Iran, nuclear, should my knee jerk? Well, you know what? It's funny because now that it's the future, the middle of the 2010s, and the Iranians still ain't got a nuke, I'm thinking maybe they never were making nukes or else, geez, they'd have one by now, right? And so maybe those warmongering, scaremongering, shouting people who love foreign countries more than they love their own country are lying again. Maybe they were lying all along, and maybe they're lying again, and maybe I shouldn't pay them no mind. On the eve of the nuclear deal. Which brings me to the real point, which is, I read this thing by Gary Sick. You remember him? He was a Jimmy Carter official, I think, who in the State Department, who wrote the book October Surprise about how the Republicans sabotaged the release of the hostages in 1980 to help get Reagan elected. By striking a secret deal with the Iranians. And, but anyway, so he's an Iran analyst in his old age working for these think tanks and what have you. I think I interviewed him one time before, maybe. He wrote this thing that had a bunch of terrible things in it, so I couldn't run it on antiwar.com. Like, he called the first Gulf War brilliant and heroic and some other stupid crap. I forgot what the other thing was where I finally quit reading it. But that's okay, because I got what was important out of it, I think, which was his real fear that we are headed toward a serious war between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Now, I don't know about that, man. I think the Saudis, I guess if they're just depending on America to fight it for them, maybe that is true. Because they certainly can't fight a war against Iran. I doubt the Iranians have an invasion force that they could take Saudi with, although I guess they'd have Shiistan in Iraq allied with them on their side this time, unlike in the 1980s, when, you know, it was a Saudi-backed proxy war, Saudi and Kuwaiti-backed proxy war against Iran then, the U.S. on both sides, but mostly Saddam's. But you see what's going on here, man, is this is the result of America invading Iraq and staying and fighting a war for the Shiite majority to kick the, and not the majority, that's a lie. That's like calling them public servants, not the majority. The Shiite majority's political parties, powerful factions that they're saddled with, the people who have taken command of the Shiite majority, that's who the Americans fought for, the Dawa Party and the Supreme Islamic Council and the various Shiite militias, and kicked all the Sunnis out of Baghdad. And it's just like Prince Bandar told Dearlove, the former head, Richard Dearlove, the former head of MI6 in Britain, he said, you know, all us Sunnis, we're just sick and tired of the Shiites and their day of reckoning is coming and this and that kind of thing. So you look at a map, it's not that much, right, to move the line from here to how wide is Baghdad? you know, at its widest point, it's what, I don't know, 30 miles wide at the max, right? Something like that. You move the line that far and you just changed everything. You just set up a century worth of dominoes to fall back down. And I'm not saying in and of itself it's wrong for the Shiite majority to, no longer be saddled with a Sunni minority dictatorship or something like that. But I'm just saying the real consequences of America doing the intervening and making it that way. They may have, if some Shiite got off a lucky shot like in the Tom Clancy book, and just, you know, got Saddam Hussein in the back of the head somehow and that kind of thing, there'd have been much more reason and much more ability of the different factions to compromise. But with Uncle Sam lording it around over there, they just became the mercenary force for those who could manipulate them the best. That's all. And so now the consequences are that, for example, just like in the redirection, we've been really singing the same song for 8 years straight now. Finally, they realized, oops, we fought a war for the Iranians that we hate so much because Israel says so. And so, and I guess there are real grudges left over from 79, stupid ones, but American ones. But oops, so we gave all of them Iraq, great going, Bush and Petraeus and the rest of you idiots. And so now let's redirect and try to undermine Bashar al-Assad in Syria in order to help weaken Iran's position, separate them from their last allied state, their only Arab allied state. And now we see the consequences of that, the rise of the Islamic State a year ago now, and no end in sight. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, y'all, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. So now my thing is, don't get me wrong, because my thing is that I think the Islamic State is a really big deal, but I don't mean to scaremonger about it. I'm trying to kind of anti-scaremonger about it. I don't think they got too much incentive to come here. I certainly don't think they have too much ability to come here. I think if they did, it would only be to try to provoke us into reinvading. So I'm certainly against that. But then again, the facts are the facts, and I like them from Patrick Coburn. And Patrick Coburn's article here, War with ISIS, as the militant threat grows, so does the West's self-deception. He makes it pretty clear that he thinks that they're a pretty damn big deal. And the thing that I can't quite get over, it really kind of bothers me, man. I got a hell of a lot of respect for Patrick Coburn, but he just seems to just go with the premise, just doesn't even really make the argument that somebody's got to stop these guys. There must be a regime change in Raqqa and Mosul. He seems to imply a lot of times that America must do it. As you've heard me say in frustration probably quite a bit over the last year, who else can do it? The Iranians or the Turks could probably, but I don't think either of them are going to send their entire army in there to do it. And then if they do, think of the consequences of all of that. If the Americans go in, think of the consequences of all of that. And that's really what they want. And they're playing the long game here. So, if America goes in there, sacks Mosul and Ramadi with the Army and the Marine Corps, and turn these guys back into a militia. Well, you can't call them a state anymore. Now they're just Al-Qaeda in Iraq again or whatever. So you can't get rid of them altogether. They'll just come right back again as soon as America leaves. What are they going to do? Reconstitute the Ba'ath Party? And make them swear that they'll never believe in Islam? Sorry for overthrowing your secular dictatorship. Let us go ahead and put it back together now. I'm pretty sure that's off. And then, as Patrick Coburn says, you want to do, the so-called awakening thing. That was backed by 150,000 American troops. Hey, all Sunni Arabs who want to make a little bit of money, who want to stop fighting the Americans and just fight Al-Qaeda in Iraq instead, come to this side of the line, and we'll help you fight them and get rid of them. Now, as Coburn says, Al-Qaeda in Iraq 06 was much weaker than the Islamic State right now. They have a huge conscription campaign going on. You know, he says he at least buys that there's 100,000 fighters. I've asked him about this. He says they got to have at least 100,000 guys. That ain't no Al-Qaeda in Iraq, man. They had what, maybe a couple of thousand guys? Maybe a few? And so, again, don't get me wrong. I don't care. Let there be an Islamic State. It's a real error for people to assume that something horrible is there. Something must be done. We must do something. In fact, think of how easy this ought to be for anyone who supported the Iraq War II against Saddam Hussein. This is the threat that they pretended he was. And they sure were all for that. So, again, this is something that was never his strategy, but was Osama's, to bait the United States into invading and occupying the Middle East. And again, for the millionth time, these ISIS guys, they still claim Osama. They have just split off from Zawahiri now that Osama's dead, but they still say that they're on, doing his goals. Establishing their caliphate just like he always wanted. Now, whether he would counsel that they wait or go ahead and do it now is unknown because now he's dead. But anyway, but they're still claiming his legacy and trying to claim his donor base, And anyway, I don't know, man. All the news is that, first of all, America's sending a bunch more guns in. That'll, of course, immediately fall into their hands, just like what happened in Mosul and Ramadi. I don't know immediately, but eventually. Here, Iraq attempts to retake Ramadi, but stalls well outside of the city. I think they're going to fight a lot harder for Ramadi than Tikrit. Although, I don't know. They are still, just a overblown militia in a way, right? They have a lot of territory and a lot of men and money. But I guess they could try to do like Tikrit, and if the force comes real heavy, go ahead and retreat for a while and just wait to fight another day. Could be. Doesn't necessarily mean anything better than a skirmish or a battle one and not a war. But I never thought they were going to be able to take Ramadi in the first place. They lost Ramadi in the first place. Now all of a sudden they're going to take it right back like it's nothing when they left all their weapons and equipment behind. And the reason why, of course, is because it's the Shiite government of Baghdad that had been ruling at least half of Ramadi at that point. That's not their territory. That's well outside their territory. They're basically out at Fort Apache out there or whatever. They came back. So what happened in Mosul, too? It's not that they were just cowards. It's that that wasn't their homeland they were fighting for. That was them occupying somebody else's. And with not enough manpower to get the job done. As Coburn reported on this show, a year before the fall of Mosul, soldiers from the Baghdad government were pulling back from Mosul because they were just way far out there in Indian country, man, in somebody else's territory, and wanted to get back safe behind the line of majority Shia territory. So, the Western Front, for the Islamic State. They continue to advance on the northeastern Syria city of Hasaka. I guess I'm saying it wrong. Heavy airstrikes not slowing the offensive. Boy, just wait until the black flag is flying over Damascus. They'll blame it on Assad. I'll be like, look, it's Assad's corpse's fault. We came, we saw, he died. It's his fault that his enemies won. Huh? Hey, good enough for New York Times work. But yeah, you know, I read this thing, and I may even run this on antiwar.com. It's by our old friend Kate Gould from the Friends Committee, the Quaker group. A whack-a-mole game we can't win. It's a Let's Disengage from the Iraq War article in U.S. News and World Report. And it's well put together. And it says something that I can't necessarily disagree with. It's what I think too, right? That, you know, this has got to be left up to reconciliation, especially inside the Sunni community in what used to be Iraq, in former Iraqi Sunnistan here, Eastern Islamic State, whatever. And whatever terms, if they can come to them with the Baghdad government, that they can somehow recreate Iraq and marginalize the Islamic State. But as they say in here, foreign intervention just makes all this much more difficult. The first thing the foreigners need to do, especially the U.S., is just quit intervening here and let the thing work out. On the other hand, I think Patrick Hoburn is right to kind of laugh and say, fat chance. It ain't going to work out. It's already too late. It's the future now. This is the consequence of what America did before. Back to Gary Sick's thing. He thinks there's going to be a real war here where, you know, Turkey, Saudi, and the Gulf allies will be outright, I guess, allied with, or de facto to such a strong extent, allied with the Islamic State at war with Iran. Now, of course, America's project in Iraq has been to fight for the Iranian side this whole time since 2003. So what are we going to do then? Redirect back again? Or just come home?
This part of the Scott Horton Show is sponsored by Audible.com. And right now, if you go to audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show, you can get your first audiobook for free. Of course, I'm recommending Michael Swanson's book, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. Maybe you've already bought The War State in paperback, but you just can't find the time to read it. Well, now you can listen while you're out marching around. Get the free audiobook of The War State by Michael Swanson, produced by Listen and Think Audio, at audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show.
Hey, man, so I was trying to get Alfred McCoy on, but it didn't work. But I'm going to try again for tomorrow. He wrote this new thing at Tom Dispatch. It's the spotlight today on antiwar.com. The geopolitics of American global decline. Hey, did you know that I didn't know that that meant the geographical implications involved in world politics? I didn't know that. I just thought that was something that pretentious people said when they were talking about politics on an international level. Oh, geopolitics. I don't know if I've ever said that word out loud before this discussion just now, even. Because I hate that. I don't like pretentious stuff. But no, apparently it has a real meaning. The politics of the geography of this, that, and the other thing, and why it's all so important. And you know, it's funny. I don't even remember who I ever interviewed about this before. I'm sure I have, and I remember writing about this and learning about it back a few years ago. Too late in life. And it's something that I should keep in mind more and use as a way to explain things to people better. And that is the whole thing about Mackinder, the British imperialist, and his thesis about Eurasia as the world island, and how it's always a battle for the Russians, who naturally rule the core of it because of just who they are and where they are, versus the outside empires whose job it is to contain them with their ring of bases, and how America just basically picked up from the British Empire and is doing the same thing that they always were. Never was about communism. Not during the Cold War. That's why it didn't change when the Cold War ended. In fact, I wonder, I'm trying to remember now if Chalmers Johnson writes about this. That's all this whole thing is, all the lily pad bases and this and that. That's what the regime change in Kiev is about. That's what all this stuff is about. That's what the war in Iraq was about, in a sense, according to Alfred McCoy. You know, encircling and hemming in that world island. This is the just the same warmed over thesis again. And he quotes Zbigniew Brzezinski at length, who is basically just himself paraphrasing Mackinder from back then. And so, you know, the reason that I was kind of kicking myself when I was reading it is because it seems like such a good way to explain things to people. That like, yeah, you know how you know it's an empire is because it's based on the exact theories that the British Empire was based on. It's the exact same thing. They're pushing the exact same policy. After World War II, they were exhausted and we picked it up. Simple as that. I guess, you know, Ukraine the strategic pivot and Moscow the prize. Anyway, and Alfred McCoy, if you're not familiar, he wrote The Politics of Heroin. And he also wrote two great books, or maybe three, about torture and something else. What am I forgetting? What was the other one? I forget. But anyway, he's a brilliant genius. I'm not saying you have to agree with everything or whatever, but he's a real scholar, a professor at the University of Madison, Wisconsin. I guess it's the University of Wisconsin at Madison. What the hell do I know, man? I gave a speech there once. He didn't come to it. Anyway. So yeah, read yourself some Alfred McCoy. And I'll see if I can get him on the show for you tomorrow. Back to the American role in the civil war in the Middle East right now, on both sides of it, of course. The Yemen rebels and government both agree to UN peace talks. Houthis laud UN call for talks without preconditions. And then supposedly the Saudi-backed government in exile has agreed to these terms as well, that they will meet the Houthis and try to work this out. So, all right, so Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com writes, both factions had been hinting at their likely attendance for a few days now, with the Houthis in particular praising the UN's call for negotiations without preconditions. Today made it official that they will both be taking part, and reports are, and that's yesterday, is today in the language here, and reports are that former ruler Ali Abdullah Saleh is expected to take part in the talks as well. The U.S. had been urging both sides to join the talks, though indications are that neither the Saudi government nor any of its allies in the world will be taking part. Southern secessionist factions inside Yemen, as well as Al-Qaeda, both of which hold territory inside Yemen, have not been invited. Nearly 2 months into the Saudi-led civil war, large numbers of people have been killed, including hundreds of civilians, and little territory has actually changed hands. Earlier on, the government had been demanding a unilateral Houthi surrender for any talks on ending the war. With a seeming stalemate, everyone seems more interested in ending the conflict. Finally, yeah, boy, I don't know, as though that wasn't obvious enough that this was never going to work. I don't know if Saleh can come back to power there. It would be a travesty if he really became the dictator again. But, you know, Hadi doesn't have any better approval rating than he does. The only difference between Saleh and Hadi to me is one was the American sock puppet dictator before the other one was. And this whole war, American and Saudi, and this whole war to reinstall Hadi, that is never going to happen. I don't care what negotiations, that just isn't going to happen. The Houthis now rule the capital. And who's going to kick them out of the capital city? And of course, that only happened because Saleh was using all the weapons and money that America was giving him to fight Al-Qaeda in Iraq and was using it against the Houthis. But in their defeat, more and more of their Zaydi Shia tribe and sect rallied to their cause. And they ended up more powerful than before. And then when the Arab Spring broke out and Saleh was overthrown, he went and made his alliance with this group that he had attacked repeatedly. And in fact, it turns out he is a Zaydi. Turns out, I guess he always was. He was a Zaydi. even though he was fighting against the Houthis. He was part of that larger movement that the Houthi movement comes from. And so cut his deal. And it was the Americans who ushered him out. It wasn't, you know, the people of Yemen said, we will not stand for this guy anymore. But they didn't get to replace him with anything like what they wanted. Hillary Clinton came in and held a one-man election, like the kind that I learned about when I was a little kid, happened in the Soviet Union. Where, yeah, they actually hold elections, but everybody there is a member of the Communist Party. Every name on the ballot is a member of the Communist Party, and nobody's really counting them anyway. And you better be careful and choose the right guy. And that is how they did this in Yemen. And Hillary Clinton praises this as democracy in action. There's one name on the ballot. And so they installed this guy, Hadi, in there, frustrating everybody who had rallied together, all the disparate factions that had rallied together to finally get rid of Saleh in the Arab Spring. And just set up the circumstances for this part of the war. And why? Because there were maybe a handful of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. I mean, what are you talking? A dozen? Two? Maybe? How many guys did they have when the drone war in Yemen started? And now that they're a movement of, if you're among the Sunni Arabs and you're not a socialist, then you're with the religious faction, because who else you got to fight with? Man. You know, I bet what we should do is we should start intervening there now and then maybe see if we can get the Republicans and the Democrats to figure out what to do. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me. Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. Yeah, people keep bringing up Macedonia to me. I did interview Nebojša Malić. Nebojša Malić. There's no H. You just got to remember to say it that way. Nebojša Malić. Used to write for antiwar.com. Now he writes for RT. And I had him on, and man, I don't know. I need to reread and read 100 things about it and then have him on again. I'm way behind. But yes, there certainly does seem to be an American-backed color-coded revolution type of a thing. I guess they don't really have a color, but they do have a revolution. Fighting over those pipelines. Yeah, man, see, back to Alfred McCoy. See, he doesn't just talk about America's imperial policy of trying to hem in the world island and all that stuff. He talks about China's reaction to it, which is to make all of that irrelevant by developing huge and many and very high-speed rail lines all the way to Spain, man. They're going for it, and they're just going to integrate the Eurasian continent in a way that it's never been done before. And the Americans can't do a damn thing about it with a bunch of drone bases in Diego Garcia. And what's funny is, and I guess I'm spoiling the interview for tomorrow or later in the week if Alfred will come back on my show again, that my whole thing of it is that this is stupid. What kind of economics is this? You don't need empire. It is to all of mankind's benefit, all things being equal. You know, assuming you don't have a war and a fight over empire, for the Eurasian continent to be more and more integrated in terms of transportation and distribution systems for goods and services. America doesn't have to lose. We can only gain from the Chinese getting rich. You know what they need to get rich? Wealth. So, yeah, who wants to live in a world with a lot more wealth in it? Boo-hoo. The only people crying here are the imperialists, watching the U.S. state and its relative power and influence and the different carrots and sticks that it used to have available to it becoming less and less available to it, crying because they don't want to have to go get a real job, basically, that's all. Because they do empire for a living. But it's not like we need them. I actually saw Bill Gates one time flipping through the channels. This is hell, a long time ago now. Maybe 20 years ago now, huh? 15 or 20 years ago. Flipping through channels, I saw Bill Gates doing some kind of question and answer thing with some MTV kids. And one of them said, what about the rise of China? And he was like, yes, hallelujah, the rise of China. Isn't it beautiful? Man, they used to be a Maoist dictatorship and all people ever did was starve to death. You know the number two killer in the history of the world after World War II was the dictatorship of Mao Zedong. World War II, which included the Japanese in China. Right? And the Russians, too, for a bit there. World War II that killed 70 million people. Second place in single events for most deaths. Communism in China. 40 million. Maybe more than that. And so, absolutely, hip hip hooray and three cheers. And if you believe in God, then hallelujah, too. For the rise of the eating class in the less totalitarian dictatorship of China. Now, and if all the people of the Eurasian steppes get rich too, then good. Did somebody poison you against the other people in the world like they're all just really out to get you? It makes you afraid to think that somebody in Kazakhstan is going to be able to open up a, I don't know, some kind of store near the new transportation route. Maybe make a little money for his people. Is that a problematic thing, you think? Does that some way threaten you in your life in any way whatsoever? The world island. Yeah, if you're a British imperialist. But I thought we understood about, you know, how mercantilism was debunked as a criminal and inefficient way for human beings to get by in the world. You know, what the hell is this? America as the British Empire? It's only not a disgrace because people don't understand it and they don't accept it. Anyway, meanwhile, back to America's war in Afghanistan. Ahem. Robert Bales is pleading for mercy, like the 16 civilians he murdered. He says he was consumed by war. Uh-huh. The U.S. soldier who massacred 16 Afghan villagers in 2012 says he had lost compassion for Iraqis and Afghans over the course of his four combat deployments. The News Tribune newspaper of Tacoma used the Freedom of Information Act to obtain an 8-page letter former Staff Sergeant Robert Bales wrote to the senior Army officer at Joint Base Lewis McChord requesting that his life sentence be reduced. Which may yet happen. He was a government employee, after all. They protect their own first, no matter what. My mind was consumed by war, he said. I planted war and hate for the better part of 10 years and harvested violence, he added. After being in prison 2 years, I understand that what I thought was normal was the farthest thing from being normal. Yeah, that is, a government employee mercenary hired killer of civilians in their country that you're occupying. No, that's not normal, is it? Or is it? And of course, all these things are true, right? The fact that the government hired him and made him a psychopathic killer for their interests is a fact. How that diminishes his responsibility is beyond me. Four tours, huh? Couldn't quit, huh? I mean, he does say, no, I planted war and hate. Okay, well. And then so one day he snapped and massacred 16 helpless, defenseless civilians in their pathetic little villages that his base was occupying adjacent to his base. why he deserves the mercy that he didn't provide for them got me. I don't see it in his argument at all. You know, but Marge, liquor's drunkened me. Yeah, well, these things happen. You don't remember the accident where you wiped out a family? Boy, man, you should have thought real hard before you started drinking that night. Anyway. And of course, civilians die all the time. It's just in this case he was hunting down and massacring women and children and elderly, specifically, deliberately, rather than saying, oops, I was trying to hit a fighting aged male and I just massacred everybody else accidentally with my high explosives dropped from the air, which for some reason is perfectly acceptable. Right? Like this time. U.S. drones attack Afghanistan funeral, killing 34 mourners. Well, you know, they did drop a bomb. It's not like one guy went in the middle of the night, went and just raided their funeral and you know, rounded them up in a circle and machine gunned them to death like the Gestapo. Nope, just dropped a bomb on top of their head. So that is perfectly cool and legit. And don't you know, they got the stars and stripes on their shoulder patches while they do it. Oh, by the way, Afghan pro-government militias running amok, fueling support for the Taliban, taking back over Afghanistan. Read Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com. Whole war for nothing. All of this for nothing. As the Taliban come back to power now.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.
All right, sorry guys, one more spot here.
Yeah, check it out. Y'all want to win a free vacation to the jungles of Costa Rica this summer and help support the Scott Horton Show? You can. Joshua Hughes, peace activist and permaculturalist, runs Verde Energia Pacifica, an intentional community in the mountains of Llanos de Periscal, Costa Rica. And he's offered to raffle off a week's stay to listeners of this show. Airfare is on you, but transportation to and from the airport, as well as a 7-day stay for you and a guest in your own private house with 3 meals a day is covered. You can learn and practice some skills, or just go for a swim in their river, pool, or waterfall, walk jungle trails, enjoy the views, do yoga or dance in the studio, make art, play music, check out a local soccer game, or simply relax in a hammock by the river and read. Raffle tickets are just $50. Stop by scotthorton.org/raffle for details. And anyone who enters will get half off on any future stay down there. scotthorton.org/raffle.
All right, good deal. I think it's a good deal. I hope you think it's a good deal. Worth a try, right?
Yeah.
Give it a try. All right, cool. Hey, so yeah, that brings us to Israel-Palestine news, don't it? Hamas warns Israel, ISIS is trying to spark a fight between us. Yeah, they know. Hamas struggling with efforts by ISIS faction to establish itself in Gaza. Now back, I told you this before, but I think it's important. In 2012 or so, some bin Ladenites poked their head up. I think it was in 2012. And Hamas went and killed them. No, you know what it was? It was 12 of them that they killed. So it might have been later than that. I knew there was a 12 in there somewhere. I think they killed 12 guys at this mosque, bin Ladenites. And Hamas said, nope. We're the religious kooks, trustees of the Israeli prison state here. Not you. Now they're fighting with these guys. And as we talked about on the show last week, of course, they fire off a couple of rockets. And what does Israel do? Attack Hamas. And of course, the premise is, oh, well, you should stop them. But they know Hamas is trying to stop them. Maybe they want the Islamic State to win. Hamas is just like the Islamic State. Ow. My tongue. Shouldn't do Netanyahu impersonations. Benjamin Netanyahu claims they're the same thing. But maybe nobody believed that because it's stupid. And so, and maybe now he had to go ahead and decide, you know what, let's bomb Hamas and encourage the Islamic State wannabe faction there. Who knows, maybe there is a real connection. Probably not. There in the Gaza Strip. Perfect. And don't tell me, oh, come on. Israel would never engage in a strategy like that. How do you think they got Hamas in the first place? Israel helped Sheikh Yassin and whatever his other friends to create the thing and establish itself. Well, it started out as a very low-level community-type organization. And they really turned it into what it was as a right-wing religious alternative to the PLO. To split Palestinian power. To divide them. And that's where Hamas came from in the first place. And just look at what they're doing in Syria right now. Back in the al-Nusra Front. Which is just al-Qaeda in Syria. It's funny because they're really not pushing too hard to whitewash and so-called, you know, moderate or what's the word? Moderatize or something. The Islamic State. I mean, how the hell are you going to whitewash guys who swear their loyalty to Ayman al-Zawahiri, the butcher of New York City? So they're having a hard time calling them moderate. They don't really have to. They just have to demonize ISIS more. And then Nusra, who are exactly like them in every way, somehow seem acceptable. America has, again, created another new FSA-type group, the Army of Conquest, they've called it. Which is, you know, I guess a Quranic reference or something. They've been fighting outright with the al-Nusra Front. And, you know, for that matter, I just saw a thing here. I have it here on my Twitter feed right now from, who's this guy again? He's from the Long War Journal. Now, those guys are no hippies and peaceniks, but they know enough about this that they've been complaining for years over there. Not the same place but where Bill Roggio writes. They've been complaining for years over there that, man, we're backing our enemies in Syria. Now, I don't know what their position is on regime change against Assad. I have to assume that they think that that's insane. Because I've certainly seen them saying, look, 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 American weapons in jihadi hands. And we're not talking about stuff that got seized from the Iraqis. We're talking about stuff that America gave to the so-called moderates, that the moderates funneled right on to the Islamic State. Either just as business or took with them when they defected and joined it. Hamas warns Israel. ISIS trying to spark fighting between us. According to officials familiar with the situation, this is Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com. Hamas sent a secret message to Israel by way of Egypt earlier this week. That would have been last week, I guess. Assuring them they were doing everything they can to stop rocket fire across the border from Gaza and warning that an ISIS-affiliated militant faction is trying to spark a new war to undermine Hamas's hold on the Strip. And the source here for this, by the way, is the Jerusalem Post. And then Netanyahu under siege in, quote, the most embattled democracy on earth. And, oh, there's the one I was looking for before. But anyway, one of these, oh, he says, the spreading hypocrisy in the world will not tie our hands. And I guess he's referring here to the boycott and divestment movement. They had a big meeting, anti-BDS summit in Las Vegas, of course, held by Sheldon Adelson. And they're basically, they're lining up every, you know, all of the most right-wing, you know, Israel lobby front groups in America to challenge and, I guess, try to, in effect, outlaw the boycott and divestment movement. And the thing is about the boycott, you understand what's going on with this. It's not really bankrupting Israel. I mean, it hurts them some. But it's what these government pigs in America call optics. What it looks like. Why is everybody boycotting Israel? Well, because they run an apartheid state. They do? I didn't know that. What's that mean? Oh, yeah, see, now so we're having a conversation about what it means to have a minority-ruled martial law dictatorship over the majority. And call yourselves a democracy. That roar in the background is the laughter and the hoots of derision. And that's what the boycott and divestment movement, that's why it frightens the Israeli government so much. I think they're really overreacting, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I encourage the boycott. I think it's great. But I think the Israelis estimate it as much more powerful than it actually is, because they're looking at it in a different way than you might think, not just economics, but PR. They like to pretend, oh, the world's against Israel just because of how good we are. They hate us because we're free. They hate us because we're Jewish. Yeah, 7 billion anti-Semites in the world, isn't it? Just something else. Except that that's not it. It's the occupations. It's the people who have no civil rights whatsoever in the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem. That's what it is. And when you have a boycott like this, and when you call it apartheid, and that message gets out, you know, people know what that means. People remember South Africa, and they remember it being morally indefensible to the point that the regime fell from it. I mean, I guess they didn't have to. De Klerk could have waged war and just declared himself dictator for life or whatever. I don't know. But, you know, he didn't. The results were that he basically accepted the condemnation of the entire world and let Mandela out of prison and let him become the new president. You know, not that I'm not saying that healed everything or made South Africa perfect or whatever, but it shows that apartheid could not stand scrutiny. Withstand it. And that's why the Israelis are freaking out about this boycott. But that's all to the good, because it just draws more attention to it. To the optics of the whole situation. Sorry, I know I hate that. Hey, thanks for listening to me, you guys. I'll see you tomorrow.